Morning.
Maybe it was a lot. It's okay.
You can allow a text.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. Please feel free to continue to take something to eat, something to drink throughout this year, even in the middle, feel free. I just want to begin, first of all, by thanking the sponsors of this series, to thank Leah Soul for sponsoring this series in memory of her mother, Marguerite Streit, and her brother, Friedolin Wischer, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, their neshamos will have an aliyah. And to thank Eileen Burke for sponsoring in memory of her parents, Sora Bas Avram, and Yosef Ben Yitzchak Halevi Zichronon Livracha, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, their neshamos will have an aliyah. I also just want to apologize to Eileen for not including her sponsorship on the sheet. And Yirtzeh Hashem, by next year, we'll have it updated. I also want to apologize. We've gone through a lot of different scheduling processes with this particular series. But again, it's going to be a two-part shiur. First part today, and Amir Tashem, next part. Second part will take place, God willing, in a week from today on New Year's morning. So what I'd like to be able to discuss, and the truth is, it's a topic that will span far beyond our two-part series this morning, is the concept of Girtz. The topic of conversion is a very complicated one on a number of different levels. It's complicated because, obviously, determining who is Jewish, who is not Jewish, has exceptional ramifications in terms of the familial integrity of Klal Yisrael. The question of who is a Jew is not a new one. although it's become exceptionally dramatized in the last couple of years because of things going on within the state of Israel, but the truth is it's been a fundamental issue that's faced our people from the beginning of time. Already we know the first time that this comes up is we know that when the Jews leave Egypt, as we'll read about in just a couple of weeks, so the Torah tells us that there was a whole group of Egyptians that joined the fold as well, a group that became known as the Erev Rav. And already we see from the beginning that this notion of individuals joining the Jewish collective for not necessarily the right motivations doesn't work out well for anyone. It doesn't work out well for the people who join. It doesn't work out well for collective Klal Yisrael. So the question as to ultimately who is a Jew or what forms the basic criteria for conversion is exceptionally important. So just to kind of create a roadmap as to what we're going to try to accomplish. Today, we're going to focus on two basic questions. Number one, what are the basic criteria for conversion? And number two, we'll focus on Kabbalas HaMitzvos, acceptance of mitzvos. What does that require of the potential convert? And then Amir Tesh, next week, we'll focus perhaps a little bit more on the, touchier issue, or more dramatic issue of conversion for ulterior motives. Most notably, conversion for the purpose of marriage, which again is a very important contemporary issue today. And the halacha lemaisa of that is quite dramatic because, again, do we, if a person is intermarried, do we encourage a prospective spouse to adopt Judaism, even though we know that perhaps they're not adopting it for the purpose of what we'll call the shema, for the pure sake of joining the Jewish people? But again, there may be some idea of they're doing it for their spouse. So that will be a little bit more next. So this week we'll focus on the actual criteria. So let's begin with number one. There should be sheets on all the tables. Okay. This, of course, also is, we covered this topic on Shavuos night. Of course, on Shavuos night, I had 5 hours to be able to do it. Now I'm going to have 2 hours, not 2 hours today, don't get worried. 1 hour this week and 1 hour next week in Eretz Hashem. So obviously a little bit more condensed, but there is a request to go ahead and give this series over. So I just want to say from the outset, the truth is even in 5 hours, those who are at this year knew we didn't get to go through everything because it is such an enormous topic with so many important ramifications. So really, my goal is to give you just a general familiarity with the major issue. So let's take a look at number one. Gemar Maseches Yevama says, Dom Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Li'olam ein ger ad shimo v'yitbo. So here we begin with the statement of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, who says that a person cannot convert until two things, circumcision and immersion. The Gemara number two says, V'chachamim omrim tavol v'lo mal, mal v'lo tavol ein ger, and the Chachamim come along and say, lest you think that this is to the chatchila, preferably two, but if you only had one of them, meaning if you had immersion without circumcision or circumcision without immersion, that technically speaking it's okay. It's not true. There is no conversion unless you have these two processes of immersion in a proper mikvah, in a kosher mikvah, as well as circumcision. The Rambam writes in number three, based on these statements, The Rambam understands that where does the paradigm of conversion come from? So we often assume it comes from where? Rus. And that's what we normally, because the truth is, Rus is the most high-profile convert. Although that might not be true, there might be an earlier high-profile convert. Who is that? Avram wasn't really a convert, right? Remember, I feel like this is almost like telling you there's no Santa Claus. There's no Jewish people until Matan Torah. Avraham Avinu was not a Jew. Yitzchak Avinu was not a Jew. Yaakov Avinu was not a Jew. There was, B'nai Yisrael is born as Sinaitic revelation. They're monotheists. So when they say that Avraham was a convert, Avraham didn't convert to anything. Avraham adopted a belief system of monotheism. So Avraham Avinu wasn't really a convert. He was someone who, I'm sorry? Sipora, Yisrael. Yisrael is probably the other one, but the reason Yisrael is a little bit tough because it's not clear what Yisrael did or what Yisrael didn't do in the end. Because remember, Yisrael comes to the Jewish people, but ultimately what? He leaves. So there's a whole discussion, why did he leave? So some, for example, I guess you'd say that maybe perhaps Yisrael was really like the first Chabad Shaliach, because the Aruch HaKadosh brings down that Yisrael actually goes back to Midian in order to spread the word of God. He could have had comfort living within the confines of the Jewish people, but he dafka goes back to the spiritual wasteland of Midian in order to spread the word. So we often think that it's Rus, that it's Yisro. The truth is, says the Rambam, the model for conversion, because remember again, whenever we try to see a halachic process, we try to look for a biblical paradigm. So what is the biblical paradigm of conversion? The Rambam posits, it's Am Yisrael. It's the Jewish people. At Har Sinai, we underwent mass conversion. So the Rambam says, whatever we did at Har Sinai, that becomes the process for conversion throughout the ages. So what did we do at Har Sinai? The Rambam says, in three Aleph, Bris, circumcision, Bris Milah, Tevila, immersion, and Karban, and sacrifices. And the Rambam goes through each of these quickly in three bays. Milah Haisa B'Mitzrayim. Interestingly enough, here, the Bris Milah actually took place in Egypt. It didn't take place at Har Sinai. They did Bris Milah in Egypt for what purpose? Karban Pesach. Because the Torah says, V'chol Orel Yolo Yochavah. If a person is uncircumcised, they cannot partake of the Karban Pesach. So Milah took place in Egypt. Take a look at paragraph Gimel. He says, Tevila was Haisa B'Midbar Kodem Matan Torah. They went to the mikvah in the desert before Matan Torah. And again, and he brings down in Dalid, V'chein L'Doros. So the Rambam says that the Sinaitic model becomes the model for our future generations. Therefore, if a person wants to convert, they require bris milah, immersion and a mikvah, and the bringing of a sacrifice, karbanos. And he says, vim the keva, and obviously, if the prospective convert is a female, obviously take off the circumcision. There is immersion in the mikvah and karbanos. And in paragraph hey, the Rambam writes, umahu karban ager. What is this offering that a ger has to bring? Behem olas behema oshte torim oshne bnei yona ushteim ola. He has to bring an ola offering. An ola offering is a karban that is fully consumed on the Mizbeach, on the altar. No part is consumed by the owner, by the Kohanim, fully given up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, if we stop right here, according to the Rambam, the process of conversion is quite simple. The process of, the process of conversion requires circumcision, bris milah, immersion in a mikvah, and bringing of a sacrifice of an ola. Where do we get that from? What are four? What, again, remember, we're all converts. We're all the children of converts. It's what our grandparents did by Har Sinai when they converted, so to speak, into being the Jewish nation. Interesting, as an aside, in number four, the Aruch HaShulchan writes, he says, Ulefizeh hayef shalomar de bizman ha-korban, de leka korban ein lekabel gerin. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, well, again, if the Rambam says that part of the process for conversion is the bringing of a sacrifice, bringing of a korban, then what? Then what? Then maybe today we should not accept converts. Because at the end of the day, at presently, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, there is no ability to go ahead and bring karbanos. So maybe we shouldn't accept converts either. Therefore, the Aruch HaShulchan writes out, Talmud Lomar, Lidoro Seichem. Therefore, the Torah says the process of conversion must be good, must be appropriate, must be accessible for future generations as well. So what the Aruch HaShulchan is saying is, the Torah itself has made an allowance for conversions to occur even when? Even in the post-temple era. What do you do about the karban then? So let's say somebody converts. Reuven converts. Reuven has to bring a karban. So what does he do about his karban? So the Aruch HaShulchan says something very interesting. He says, if you look at number four, three lines in, Umitchila tiknu sheyafrish ma'os al ha-karban. So what used to happen? And again, when he says used to, I don't know when this was. But the Rambam says that it used to be that when a person converted, the convert would set aside money for his or her sacrifice. For his or her sacrifice, so I'm converting, I can't bring the carbon, there's no Beis HaMikdash. Here's a, let's assume, we'll call it $100. Here's $100 that I'm actively setting aside for my carbon. This when Mashiach comes in years Hashem Mehira V'Yameinu, there's a third Beis HaMikdash, I will take that money and I will bring an offering. So you'll ask yourself, but who's ever heard of that today? So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, he says, "Va'achar kach bitluha letakanazu." The rabbis stopped this practice. Why did they stop this practice? Mipnei hatakala ki lomar dechishemafish hamaos ala karban harihem hektish velo yimalech liyistam shubahem b'meshach hazman molin behektish. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, the rabbis stopped this practice. Why? Because it's dangerous to keep sacrificial money around the house. Why is it dangerous to keep sacrificial money around the house? Because, you know what, you'll end up using it. And at least you think, so what's the big deal? I could replace it. So that's not true. Remember, you know, interestingly enough, if let's say a person has a pushka, a person has a tzedakah box in their house, and I'm running short, I have to give my kids money for their school trip. Can I take money out of the pushka and give it to my kids? Yes. I just have to make sure, I see some of the parents nodding their heads. Yes, it's okay. It's okay that you did it. Right? You can, as long as what? As long as you know for sure that you're going to replace it. Because remember, when it comes to tzedakah money, it's the same way that, let's say I have my pushkin, it's filled with coins. So now I don't have to go ahead and spend, you know, $375 shipping $75 worth of coins to the tzedakah. What could I do? I could take the coins, I could send the check, and Gamaru. Why? Because when it comes to tzedakah, I'm not really sanctifying the money itself. What am I sanctifying? The value. The value, there's X amount of dollars, meaning so it doesn't matter if I use those coins, I use a different coins. That's when it comes to tzedakah. When it comes to monies set aside for sacrificial use, the money itself becomes kodesh. So if I had money, if I set aside $100 for an ola, and then my kid has a field trip, I can't say, okay, little Chaim, well, here's the ola money, and we'll replace it later on. You can't do that. Ola money is sacrosanct. Ola money is kodesh. So the Aruch HaShulchan said, the rabbis were concerned, what's going to happen? If a person converts and sets aside ola money, that means that I have to make sure that $100 remains untouched until the Mashiach comes and the Beis HaMikdash is built. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, it's playing with fire. Therefore, we stopped the practice of having converts set aside money for sacrificial purposes. But what does the convert have to do? What does the convert have to do? The convert does have to remember that when Mashiach comes, they are going to have to bring an ola, which means, again, a sacrifice that is fully consumed on the Mizbeach, for the purpose of their conversion. Now, the truth is, we know when Mashiach comes, it's not just going to be the convert. There's going to be a huge backlog of karbanos. Because the truth is, again, remember, if I accidentally violated Shabbos, which inevitably happens, there's a karban chatos for that. So there are plenty of karbanos that, right, a woman gave birth, there's a karban for that. So everybody's going to have to bring a whole bunch of karbanos when Mashiach comes. But again, the convert does have to be consciously aware that he or she is going to have to bring a special karban for their gerus. But the point is, as much as the Rambam says that the bringing of the karban is an indispensable part of the conversion process, it's indispensable when there's a Beis HaMikdash. But in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash, conversion still goes through, but just know that the convert owes that particular karban. Now, of course, the obvious question that comes up is, what happens if there are circumstances that prevent mila, right? When does this come up? Hemophilia. Let's say again, let's say you have a non-Jew who wants to convert, a non-Jewish man who wants to convert, but he has hemophilia. So I guess today there are medications that allow for clotting, things like that, so you can have the circumcision. But again, some of the tshuvas that we're going to see were written before there was medication to address this. So obviously, again, now the Rambam said, the Gemara discusses this case. The Gemara discusses a case of Mesu Echav Machmas Mila. That if you have a little boy, who was born, and Nebuch, his older brothers died because of Bris Mila. So Chazal already understood, without calling it hemophilia, that there's some type of clotting disorder. There's something wrong in the family that has caused the previous boys in the family to die as a result of Mila. So what does the Gemara say? You don't give him a Bris. You don't give him a Bris. Obviously, again, Bris Mila is important. But at the end of the day, one is not obligated to put themselves in mortal danger to go ahead and have a bris mila. It's not yiharik val yavor. So what happens, however, if, again, our prospective convert wants to convert but can't have a bris? So the Shulchan Aruch discusses this. He says, not this exact case, but we'll see. Look at number 5. Ger shenichnas lekal Yisrael, chayiv mila tchila. So the first thing you have to do, part of the conversion process, is bris mila, which is important as well. Because as much as the Rambam said, you're chayiv in Bris Mila, Tevila, and Karban, understand the Rambam is giving you a specific order. Bris has to come first. After Bris is immersion in the mikvah, and only after immersion in the mikvah is bringing of sacrifices. If you reverse the order, it's Gantz Tzaris. There's a lot of rabbinic literature. You know, one of the interesting cases that come up, we're not going to deal with this today, is what happens, let's say, if a person dies mid-conversion process. So we'll actually get to it more next week. If a person was in the process of converting, had a bris mila, died before immersion in a mikvah. So what's the question? Where do you bury him? does such a person get buried in a Jewish cemetery, or does such a person get buried in a non-Jewish cemetery? Which is very important, because the question, the fundamental question is, are you only Jewish at the end of the process, once the process has become complete? Or are you Jewish once you begin to embark on the process? I'm leaving you, we're not going to answer that. We're going to answer that more next week, because it's going to be, it's going to apply to some of the cases we're going to deal with. Look at the Rambam says. So what happens? You have to do Bris Mila first. V'imal kishay obe kochavim, oshen nolad mahol, tzarech lahatif mimeno dam bris, ve'im mevarkin alav. So it's an interesting case. Because again, today, circumcision is very common, even among non-Jews. So you can easily have a situation of a man who's going to convert, and he's already circumcised. So what do you do in that situation? The Shulchan Aruch says, we tell him, call hatapas dam bris. We draw circumcisional blood, which of course you can't circumcise if there's no orla, if there's no foreskin, but we draw a little bit of blood from the makom milah without a bracha. V'im nichras hagid in milaso ma'akeves mileheskayer v'sagile b'tvila. Let's say, God forbid, a man is missing the male organ, he's missing, again, the makom milah. So in that case, obviously, again, there's no circumcision, and he could convert without having a bris milah. Skip down to number six. Comes Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. And again, I included a little bit of a biography here, so you could see who we're talking about. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was the Rav in Yerushalayim. So he writes the following. Ger, look at this case that came before him. Ger, she'i efshar lamolo machma sakana. There's a non-Jew, a potential convert, who we can't circumcise him because of sakana, because it's dangerous. And again, the assumption of it is we're referring to cases of hemophilia. Adashe, loso, the ger sheba lehis gayer. So we have a person who wants to convert, and the doctors say that because literally of weakness of his heart, we can't go ahead and circumcise him. So here's what we have. We have on one hand telling me that you can't convert without circumcision, but yet, what did the Shulchan Aruch say? That if a person, God forbid, is missing the anatomy, so what happens? Convert without bris milah. So Tzvi Pesach Frank asks a very interesting question. He says, if a person can't have bris milah because of medical issues, because of hemophilia, so can we treat that as a case like what? Right? Where a person is missing the anatomy. Can we say that essentially, since we can't circumcise him, it's as if, again, anatomically, there's no circumcision that can take place, and therefore what? Such a person perhaps could join the fold of the Jewish people just with simple immersion and a mikvah. So look what he writes, paragraph base, ulam yesh ladun bazeh. Now he introduces here something very interesting. He says, apimad isa b'gemari v'amitz, the gemara we quoted earlier, li'yan ger shetava v'lomal, sh'rabi elazer v'rabi yud desorim, sh'ger shetava v'lomal, hari ze ger. There is an opinion in the gemara that says, that if a person immersed in a mikvah and did not do circumcision, that the bris works. Why? Shekein matzinu b'noshim b'shas matan Torah shenis gairu b'tvila bilvat. This is very interesting. So how do we know that if a man went to the mikvah for conversion purposes and didn't do bris, that the conversion should be good? That's something very interesting. How do we know it from? From women. Now, the fact that a woman could convert by simple immersion in a mikvah indicates that what? That at the core of the issue, bris milah, as important as it is not an indispensable part of the conversion process. Therefore, if Tzvi Pesach Frank wants to say, paragraph Gimel, ulefize be'eno yochol lomo mipnei sakana, in a situation of where the prospective convert cannot convert because of sakana of the bris milah, danger of the bris, lichora nikra I efshar. So Tzvi Pesach Frank makes an amazing ruling. He says, in a situation where bris milah cannot occur because of a medical condition, so we will allow the person to convert. Why? Why? Because of two reasons. Number one, because if we can't do the milah, we can count that as what? As if the person anatomically is deficient and doesn't have the organ to be able to do the milah. That's number one. Plus, we'll say that a person who can't do the bris milah should be no different than what? Than a woman who could convert simply by immersion in a mikvah. Therefore, if Tzvi Pesach Frank paskin, then in a situation where a person wants to convert, but bris milah cannot happen because of medical considerations, it does not block the conversion from happening, and the person could convert even without bris milah, just with simple immersion in a mikvah. In number 7, the Sri Deish, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, argues. He says, Ubahasalikna, she'ein lahatir bishum ofen, gerus betvila lechud, b'misha mila sakhani hilo. So Sri Deish, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg says, Ritzi Pesach Frank, I absolutely disagree with you. I don't know if they were aware of each other's tshuvas or not. But the Sri Deish writes, he says, absolutely not. He says, absolutely not. He says, if you can't have Mila, you can't convert. If you can't have Mila, even if, again, if you can't have Mila for a very good reason, because of a medical condition, Sri Deish says, if you can't have bris, you can't convert. V'lo od, not only that, listen to this, V'lo od, Ela afilu im yisratze lahachnis es atzmo l'sakhano v'lamu. Let's say the prospective ger says, you know what, I'm willing to take my chances. I'm willing to take my chances. I'll put myself in sakhano. I want to have the bismillah. I want to have be Jewish. The Sri Deish says, we do not let a person place themselves in sakhano for the purpose of conversion. In the kablo. Why? Listen to this. L'fi sheyesh baze chilul Hashem v'sakhano l'klal Yisrael. Imchas v'shalom yomus machmas mila. This is the Aish says, you want to talk about bad PR. Here it is. Right? Right? Joe Schmo, right? Joe O'Toole. You know, in the process of conversion dies. He dies. He's trying to become Jewish and he died. And why did he die? You know, you want to talk about feeding into blood libels, feeding into all of these things. Through the age says, no way, no how. You can't convert. And even if he wants to undertake it with sakana, we will not allow. See, here you have a fundamental dispute between Ritzi Pesach Frank, who essentially says, again, when there's a medical condition that prevents Mila, you could convert without Mila. And the Sri Deish who says, absolutely not. If you can't do Mila, even for valid reasons, no conversion. And if you look at number 8, you see over here the Melamed Lahoil of David Tzvi Hafman, who says, Horisi she'ein lekabel ger she'efshar lihimo machmas she'aide b'sakhanat farsh. So the Melamed Lahoil agrees with the Sri Deish that where there is no Mila, there is no conversion. So what is the fundamental dispute? Here's the fundamental dispute. Remember, the Shulchan Aruch told us a very interesting principle. And the Shulchan Aruch spoke about a dramatic case of Nikeres Hagid, where literally a person is missing the male member, a person ultimately is anatomically deficient. So the Shulchan Aruch says, in that case, Mila is not Ma'akev, right? The Mila does not hold back the conversion process. So the fundamental dispute seems to be, in a case where you can't do bris mila because of medical considerations, is that the equivalent to being anatomically deficient? Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says, yes. If you can't do the mila, it's no different than if a person did not anatomically have that part of his anatomy. If you can't do it, it's as if it's not there. If it's as if it's not there, then what? Then what? Then it doesn't prevent conversion from going through. Why? Because in that case, interestingly enough, halachically, this person will be no different than who? Than a woman who could convert, obviously, with just immersion in the mikvah. Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, the Sri Deish, says, what are you talking about? You can't say it's not there if what? If it's there. Right? You can't say it doesn't exist if it exists. And says Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, you cannot have a convert with an arla. You can't have a convert with a foreskin. You can't have a convert who literally is uncircumcised. And therefore, the Sri Deish says, in that kind of case, we're sorry, you have a medical condition. Nevertheless, it will prevent you from becoming Jewish. Who do we paskin like? Depends who you ask, right? So again, the truth is today, these issues don't come up as much because Baruch Hashem, modern medicine has addressed these issues to a great extent, and we could control these issues through medicine. So the truth is, I personally never heard of a shayla like this coming up contemporarily. But again, back in the day, you see fundamental machlokes between Ritzi Pesach Frank and Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg. Let's go on a little bit. So now we come to part 2. So again, so far what we have from part 1 of the conversation is, what are the criteria for conversion? Number 1, bris mila. Number 2, immersion in mikvah. Number 3, carbon, right? We saw again the Aruch HaShulchan said that even though you need a carbon is not ma'akev, we don't set aside money, just leave it on the side. Bris Mila, Shulchan Aruch said again, Bris Milah only when possible. If a person is anatomically deficient, Bris Milah won't hold you back from doing from converting. What happens if a person is anatomically whole but has a medical condition? Dispute between our PC Pesach Frank, who says you can convert because inability to do the Milah because of a medical condition is no different than being anatomically deficient, is no different. You apply the criteria of a woman, immersion will produce conversion. Sri De'esh says no. If the Arla is there, the Arla is there. And if the non-Jew cannot circumcise, that puts an obstacle to the conversion process. Yes. Bless you. So that would be even clearer that it wouldn't work. I would even venture to say that in that case, the Sri De'esh would say, even Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank would say, don't convert. Don't convert. Meaning, because there, the difference over there is that what's holding me back from doing the Milah is something external. If it's something external and I choose not to do the Milah, that's my decision. I can't convert without the Milah. Here, the only reason why Tzvi Pesach Frank is allowing for this conversion to go through, even though this person cannot circumcise, is because there's an internal condition that's preventing me from doing the Milah. But I think anything external would absolutely prevent the conversion from going through. So now we come to Roman numeral number 2, Kabbalas HaMitzvos, which again we find ourselves now on the third page of the source packet. So this is probably the most complicated part of the conversion story because, well, take a look at number 9. So what is the Gemara says about Tan Rabbana? The rabbis teach, Ker Shebal Hiskayer Bezman Hazeh. If someone comes to convert presently, so what do we say to them? Omrim Lo Ma Ra'isa Shebasal Hiskayer. So what's the first thing we say to them? What the heck are you thinking? Right? That's a direct quote, right? What is going through? Why in a million years would you possibly want to undertake this? Do not know the Jewish people are oppressed. The Jewish people are trampled upon. The Jewish people suffer terribly. If so, again, there's another piece to this as well, which is, you understand something. You don't need to be Jewish to get Olam Haba. You don't need to be Jewish to be loved by God. You don't need to be Jewish to have, to enjoy incredible spiritual benefit. You don't need to be Jewish. You can be a righteous Gentile. And the truth is, it takes a lot less to be a righteous Gentile than it does to be a righteous Jew. You have 7 mitzvos, right? A good 4 of them, the truth is, are just basic common decency issues. So we say to the person, why do you want to do this? Why undertake this? So again, what we say is in the negative, do you understand what you're signing up for? You're signing up to be part of a persecuted, trampled upon people. Im Omer, if a person says, Yodea Ani, yes, I know, Ve'ini Kedai, but yet I feel even unworthy to join such a great people. Meaning a person says, I know, I read the fine print, but I still feel humbled about the ability to be part of this people. Mekablen Oso Miat. We accept him or her immediately. Meaning, what the Gemara is saying is, if a person after hearing all of this says, I still want in, so the Gemara says, we accept the person immediately. So the Gemara says, number 10. So why do we give a person this whole speech? My time, why do we go ahead and tell a person, do you know that Jewish people are persecuted, trampled upon? Deparish nefosh. Because the truth is, ideally, we don't want the person to convert. Ideally, we don't want the person to convert. Now, why is that? Is that because we don't like converts? Chas v'shalom. Remember, the Torah itself gives us, in addition to the mitzvah of v'yahavta l're'acha kamocha, which tells us to love our fellow Jew, the Torah gives an additional mitzvah by the convert of v'yahavtan esager. So I have to love the convert doubly. I have to love the convert because they're a Jew. I have to love the convert because they're a convert. So obviously, we are not convert averse. So why are we trying to get the person? Because ultimately, again, it's a lot to be a Jew. It's a lot. It's an overwhelming responsibility. It's an incredible privilege. But ultimately, if we could convince the person not to do this and try to find piety and spirituality in their current Gentile life, that's what we would rather have them do. The parish nifrosh. So yes, we try to actively scare the person away in order that they should find fulfillment in their current life. Take a look at number 12. The Gemara goes on, but that's not finished. We're not finished yet. Umodian also, mixas kalos, umixas chamuros, so what happens? Now, obviously, it's not just enough to say, you know, do you know that we're persecuted? And if the person says yes, we say, okay, welcome to the club. You have to tell them a little bit what it means to be a Jew. So we tell them some of the chomer mitzvos, some of the intense mitzvos. Chomer means mitzvos that carry with them strict punishments for non-observance. And we tell them, odin osa avon leket, shechcha upeya u'maiser ani. This is interesting. We tell them about all of the tithes. Now, why do we tell them about all the tithes, right? Because understand, it is very expensive to be Jewish. Right? Essentially, today what we're telling about is about yeshiva tuition, right? So just to say, you know those vacations you took when you were a Gentile, kiss those goodbye, right? You know the boat you have, right? It's amazing. Every single non-Jewish person has a boat, right? How? Because they're not paying for yeshiva tuition. So you know all of those luxuries that you had when you were non-Jewish because you had all of this additional discretionary income. The shul's gonna get you. The yeshiva's gonna get you. Every Jew, you're gonna get a stack of envelopes like this every single day in the mail. So just be prepared. To be a Jewish means the willingness to part with your money, Baruch Hashem, all for good things, all for beautiful things. But it's expensive to be Jewish. Umodian osan onshan shal mitzvos. We tell a person all of the punishments associated with mitzvos. Again, it's not just all nice. You know, very often when people go ahead and people become exposed to Judaism and people express an interest to go ahead and be part of Klal Yisrael, no one says, oh, you know, I want to be a Jew because I heard that if you eat chametz on Pesach, you're chayiv kores. Oh, I heard about this and this turned me on so much. I want to be a Jew. No one ever says that. Instead, what do people say? I had a Shabbos meal and it was beautiful and there were zemiros and those are all beautiful things. So tell the person, just understand, it's not all nice singing Shabbos zemiros at the table. There's kares and there's skila and there's this punishment if you do this and there's this punishment if you do that and if you speak Lashon Hara, you violate 49 lavim, each of which carries the mouth. So again, we tell them all the punishments associated. We tell the person, before you came to this, you know, you're non-Jew right now. Just know, you know, if you wanted to eat, that cut of meat, filet mignon, right, or bacon, or you wanted to eat the fats. So you use as fats over here. You want to use the fats. You want to eat the fats of the animal. You could do it, no problem. When you become Jewish, if you consume certain fats, it comes with the punishment of kares. Kares is spiritual excommunication. Chilal to Shabbos. If you decided that on Shabbos you wanted to go ahead and go out and go wherever you want, there's no punishment. You could do whatever you want, even if you designate your seventh day as a day of rest. If you eat chaylev, you're chayv kares. Chilal to Shabbos. If you purposely transgress Shabbos, anush skila. Ultimately, your punishment is skila, stoning. So again, what we do is, on one hand, we go ahead and we tell them mitzvos kalos. We tell them some of the easy requirements. But then for full disclosure, we also want to tell the person that some things, and sometimes they appear to be relatively minor transgressions, but they carry with them very stiff penalties. Now, what the Gemara is introducing us to is this idea of Kabbalas HaMitzvos. Kabbalas HaMitzvos means, and again, the reason why this is important is because in number 9, it makes it sound like that all you need to tell the person, the prospective candidate for conversion, is it's hard to be a Jew, we're persecuted, and as long as the person says, I'm in, that they're in. The Gemara says, no, not so quick. You have to tell them what it means to be a Jew. So we go ahead and we give them some of what we call mitzvos kalos, lighter mitzvos, easier mitzvos, some more intense mitzvos. We tell them about punishments. We tell them about rewards. Now the Rambam goes on. This is called Kabbalas mitzvos. The Rambam says in number 13, Umodiyan osan ikri hadas. Now this is very interesting because there is one thing missing from the Gemara. And what's missing from the Gemara? A discussion about what?
God,
right? Isn't that fascinating? We tell a prospective convert about mitzvos, about the obligations, no discussion about God. Because remember, again, if a person's coming from another religion, really leaving aside, is actually very apropos. There's a big discussion in the poskim. Maybe that's a good contemporary halacha, legal halacha series, about what religions are considered to be avodah zarah. Is Christianity avodah zarah or not? Again, it's a big discussion because Christianity is very interesting because on one hand, again, there's a trinity, but on the other hand, it's the three that's one. It's a very interesting theological model that it's the, right? So again, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost are three parts. We're in the right shear. Don't worry. are three parts, but ultimately they're of one unit. Islam is certainly a monotheistic religion. Again, right, what they believe in Allah is ultimately one. So it's a very interesting discussion among the poskim as to whether or not Christianity, or Islam for that matter, are Avodah Zarah or not. Now you'll see that's not just an academic question, because, you know, again, one of the Gimel Chamuros, one of the three sins which we must sooner give up our life rather than transgress, is to adopt an idolatrous way. So again, unfortunately, this was halacha l'maaseh for the Jews throughout the ages. Would a Jew be obligated to go ahead and give up his life rather than to embrace Islam or to embrace Christianity? Much, much halachic literature has been written about it. In any event, what the Rambam points out over here is something very interesting. The Gemara doesn't talk about God. It doesn't talk about God. It talks about mitzvos, talks about obligations, no discussion about God. So the Rambam writes number 13, Umodion oso ikri hadas, shu yichod Hashem v'isra'akum. One of the first things we tell the prospective convert is the fundamentals of faith. What are the fundamentals of faith? There's one God. He's not divisible by any parts. There's no multi-part to the one. He's one God. V'isra'akum. Just understand, when you convert, it means that you must actively turn your back on anything and everything you believed before. Meaning, it's not the pshat that you could convert to Judaism, and you know what, I'll still celebrate this, or I'll celebrate that, or I remember that. No, understand, when you choose this team, you choose this team to the exclusion of everything else. U'ma'arichin b'davar hazel, we spend a lot of time on this. U'modir also miktas mitzos kalos, u'miktas mitzos chamuros, ve'im ma'arichin b'davar zeh. So the Rambam writes again. So the Rambam introduces us to something that the Gemara does not discuss. So the Rambam again tells us that we have to teach a person about theology, not just about Jewish behaviors, not just about Jewish actions, not just about Jewish obligations, but ultimately about ikri hadas, fundamentals of faith. The obvious question is, where does the Rambam actually get this from? Right? Because again, the Gemara doesn't say it. So if you look at number 14, the Magid Mishnah writes, Rabbi Dalav Tolus, he says the following. He says, if you look at the last three lines, Aval hadavar pashut shekeban she'elohim ikri hadas, ve'amun atzarek lahaminam beberu, ulodim laharichimam bazeh shu ikri hayados. So the Magid Mishnah says it's obvious. Just because the Gemara doesn't say it. You know why the Gemara doesn't say it? Why doesn't the Gemara say it? Because it's obvious. Because it's obvious. Of course, you have, I mean, what the Gemara is saying is, often the Gemara uses this type of literary style where the Gemara will assume the reader understands certain things and will only say the things that perhaps I would not have picked up on intuitively. So the truth is, what the Magid Mishnah is saying is the Gemara thought that you might have thought the only thing you have to tell the person about is God and not anything else. Kamashron, the Gemara says, no, you have to tell about mitzvos kalos, chamuros, all the different mitzvos, but the Gemara doesn't talk about theology because that's obvious. However, the Rambam in the codification of halacha has to put in this ikre hadas as well. In number 15, the Ma'aser Rokeach writes, it's very interesting, that the Rambam had a different gears of the Gemara. You know, by the way, that there are multiple manuscripts of the Talmud. It's actually very interesting. If you go online, the Vatican just recently started scanning and posting copies. And the Vatican has the largest Jewish library in the world. And in fact, there are some manuscripts that actually we don't have that the Vatican does have, including some of the early editions of the Talmud. So it's amazing that you could see online some of the earlier versions of the Talmud. And again, there are different versions. Like any literary work, there are different, there are earlier versions, there are later versions. So what's amazing is the Ma'aser Rokeach is suggesting that in the version of the Talmud that the Rambam was working off of, the Talmud did make mention of Ikri Hadas. The Talmud did make mention of, we'll call it, theological fundamentals. But in any event, if we round this out over here, the Rambam tells us, therefore, that it's not just enough to tell a person about intense mitzvahs, strict mitzvahs, less strict mitzvahs. You have to give a person almost like a little bit of like a religious smorgasbord. So we'll give you some of the easy mitzvahs, some of the more intense mitzvahs. We'll give you a little bit of the rewards, a little bit of the punishments. But of course, it must also be peppered with these theological tenets that form the foundation of Judaism. Look at number 16. The Gemara goes on. The Gemara says, but we don't just paint a picture of doom and gloom. The Gemara says, ukeshem shemodian also onshon shamitzos, kach modian also matan scharan. We don't just tell the prospective convert about the punishments. We want to be even-handed, and therefore what? We want to also tell the convert about the rewards. There are beautiful rewards. And what happens? Kach modian also. Omer lo, hevi odea, sha'olam haba eino asui ela letzadikim. Know that the world to come He's only reserved for the righteous. V'yisrael b'zman hazeh inim yichonu l'kaba l'orof tova v'lorof paranos ve'imar ben alav ve'imidaktikin alav. So we tell the person, listen, there's a lot of reward. Now the truth is, you might not see that reward in this world, because often the reward for religious activity is seen in the world to come, but the reward is absolutely there. So we don't want the potential convert to have a skewed view. We don't want to think that it's just punishments, and it's just lashes, and it's just chatos, and it's just kares, and skila. No. There's a lot of beauty. There's a lot of reward also. Number 17. Now this is very interesting. Means what? We don't overload him. We don't overload him. Because understand, obviously, before a person converts, a person can't know everything, for the simple reason that even a person who was born Jewish doesn't know everything. So we can't overload him with everything at once. This is very interesting also. Imidaktin love means we're not too exacting with him. We'll have to define what that means. Amar Rabbi Elazar Maikra, how do we know this? Tichsiv Vatira ki misameta sila leches ita vatechta ladabra eleha. This is interesting. The Gemara then goes through the conversation between Naomi and Rus. Remember again, Naomi tells Rus to go back. She's a Midianite princess. A Moabite princess, excuse me. Go back home. Go to your family. I have nothing to offer you. And Rus insists on joining Naomi. And what happens? At a certain point, what does Naomi do? She accepts. She says, she gives up. She says, fine, you can come with me. The Gemara uses that as a paradigm to indicate that we tried to convince the potential convert that this is not a good idea for you, that you could be a very holy person even without Judaism, that you could have a wonderful life without Judaism. But if they're persistent and they still want to continue on this journey, the Gemara says at a certain point in time, what do? We accept them. Now, skip down a little bit to number 19. The Gemara says, Kibel. Now, Kibel means what? Accepted. Accepted what? Accepted mitzvos. That's what it sounds like. Accepted mitzvos. A person accepted mitzvos upon themselves. Malin oso miyad. If it's a man, we immediately perform circumcision. My taima. Now, again, what the Gemara is saying over here is we don't wait. My taima. Shehuye mitzvah l'mashayinah. Because after a person has made the decision to what? To ultimately join the Jewish people, there's no reason to wait. If a person really has demonstrated a commitment and a resilience to see this process through to the end, there's no reason to delay. Skip to number 21. The Shulchan Aruch says down the following. The Shulchan Aruch says, now, what I want to hear, k'shebat lehisgayer, omrim lo, so the Shulchan Aruch goes through over here just some of the basic ideas that we said before. That when he comes to convert, we first give him the turn-off speech. What's the turn-off speech? Turn-off speech is, why are you doing this? Why? And by the way, you know, it's a real good piece of advice, because the truth is, from the Gentiles' perspective, it is not necessarily in their best interest to become Jewish, because the truth is, they could have a lot more in life and a lot easier life and still holiness and spirituality without becoming Jewish. There is no mitzvah to become Jewish. The greatest proof to that is when Mashiach comes, and the world will realize the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So is everybody going to become Jewish? No. Meaning, remember, this is one of the major differences between, let's say, Judaic and Christian theology, that everybody believes in some type of future revelation. But in other religions, future revelation requires that everyone else will believe like Islam. Everybody else will believe like Christianity. We don't have that idea. We believe when Mashiach comes, everybody will become monotheists, right? Everybody will recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But everybody's still going to be doing their own thing. Now that everybody's going to become Jewish. So you see it from that perspective, that even in our ideal paradigm, not everybody is Jewish. That's why we don't proselytize. We don't proselytize because we don't believe in this idea that it's mankind's destiny to become Jewish. It's the Jewish people's destiny to become Jewish, and it's mankind's destiny to do their best in whatever particular role and destiny they've been given. Everybody has a different destiny. So therefore, again, the turn-off speech is not just a formality. It's real. I care about you, prospective convert, and I know what you're about to step into. You don't even know what you're about to step into, and I'm telling you, you're better off not stepping into it. Okay, they still do it. What happens? If you look three lines down, the underlying line, we're not going to do this whole Shulchan Aruch. Umodin also ikriadas. So here you see the Shulchan Aruch adapts the position of the Rambam, that we don't just tell them some of the less intense mitzvahs, some of the more intense mitzvahs, some of the rewards, some of the punishment. Rather, what else do we give them? Theological fundamentals. Oneness of God,
You can't worship anything you worshipped in your previous life. Skip down a little bit. And the Shulchan Aruch goes on to say, we talk about rewards, we talk about punishments, and then you see those two underlined words. V'im kibel, if a person accepted this upon themselves immediately, malin oso miyad, we do circumcision immediately, mamtinin achi, strapping, wait till a person heals from circumcision, and after that, v'achakach matbilin oso tevila hogenes below chatzitza. And afterwards, again, we immerse the person in a mikveh afterwards, and conversion is complete. Now, what's interesting over here is the following. What happens if a person converts and they didn't accept all the mitzvahs? Didn't accept all the mitzvahs. So again, remember, in the pure model, is the potential convert learning everything? Of course not. So what is the potential convert doing? The potential convert is learning basic fundamental concepts, theological concepts, and of course halachic concepts. Because again, if a person is going to convert, you have to know how to be behaviorally Jewish on a day-to-day level. Because there are a lot of obligations for us on a day-to-day level. Shabbos, Yom Tov, Kashrus, Taras HaMishpacha, basic staples of what it means to be a Jew. We assume that's what a person, with the understanding, there's a lot of other stuff you have not yet learned, but you commit yourself in your growth process to learn more as time goes on. Let's say a person converts and they did not accept everything, right? A person converts and what happens? They think to themselves, you know what? That shatnez thing, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Or basar b'chalav, you know what? The truth is, you know, basar, right? The cheeseburger, I'm going to give up the cheeseburger. I'm saying, what is it? It's like 50 cents. You know, mamish, it's crazy. You know, so again, what happens if there's something deficient in the person's Kabbalah HaMitzvos? I don't, because remember, in the pure paradigm, so the convert is coming forward, I accept everything. And everything means what? That which I know and that which I don't. So meaning, and we say this to a person that's converting, we say to a person, you know, you may, tomorrow after your conversion, you may be opening up a sefer, and you may find the halacha, and you may say, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. That makes no sense to me. Just understand that you are accepting that upon yourself right now. But let's say a person didn't. So let's say you have Kabbalah HaMitzvos without a full acceptance. Then the obvious question becomes what? Is the conversion good or not? So look at number 24. The Gemara seems to deal with this quite simply and in a straightforward fashion. Let's say a non-Jew wanted to convert, and I'm going to convert except for one thing. But it's not so bad if you think about it. 612. 612 out of 6, I think it's better than most of us are batting, right? So again, I'll accept everything except for one mitzvah. Ein mikablono. So sorry, you can't do that. It's either all or nothing. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer, afilu diktuk echa midivrei sofrim. Wow. Not only, it doesn't just apply to biblical law. What happens if a prospective convert says, I accept everything except, you know what? I don't think kalisha is a real issue. It's written in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's rabbinic, and I think it's ridiculous. It's reflective of past times. I don't hold of it, says Rabbi Yosef Yehuda. That's why you don't have to hold of it. No, you don't have to hold of it at all. You know why? Because you're not Jewish, right? Because if you go ahead and you predicate your conversion that you are not accepting something, be it biblical or rabbinic, the conversion is not good. We have a major problem. Look at number 26. There's the famous story. Tanur Rabbanan. There was once a prospective convert, a non-Jew, who came before Shammai. What did he say to Shammai? Amar lo, kama toros yesh lachem? He says, Shammai, how many Torahs do you have? Amar lo, shtayim. So Shammai said, we have two Torahs. Torah shebichsav, Torah shebapeh. We have a written law, right, which is the five books of the Torah, and an oral tradition, Torah shebapeh. Amar lo, so what did the non-Jew say to him? Shebichsav ani ma'amincha, v'shebapeh ani ma'amincha. So what does the Gentile say? All right, I'm ready to convert, but I'm going to be a biblical Jew, not a rabbinic Jew. Right? So I agree, I'll accept the written law, but I will not accept the oral law. What happens? Geirani amash shatandini Torah shebichsav. So he says to Shammai, convert me just on the condition that I'm only bound by the written law. Garbo votzia bin azifa. So simply put, Shammai berated the guy, and he chased them away. Balif nehila. So the same guy came before Hillel with the same request. I want to convert, but I only want to accept the written law, not the oral law. And what happened? Gairei, Hillel converted him. Yoma kama amar le alef beis gimel dalit lemachar apich le. So the person knew nothing. So what happens? The first day Hillel begins teaching him alef beis. What does he say? Alef beis gimel dalit. Okay. The next day he comes to the student and he says, Dalit Gimel Beis Aleph. He reverses the order. Amalei. Vaha etmo lo amrit liachi. So now the converse says, still, but I don't see, yesterday you told me Aleph Beis Gimel Dalit. Today you're telling me Dalit Gimel Beis Aleph. So what's the pshat? So he says, Amalo. Lav alai didi kasamchit. Da'al peh nami samochalai. So he says, oh, you see, for your learning, you are relying on me. So I'm telling you to rely on the oral tradition as well. What Hill was trying to point out is that, again, you always need the oral law in order to fill in the blanks or in order to shed light on the written law. In the same way, Hill said to the convert that you are dependent on me for the order of your Aleph Beis, depend on me when I tell you that what? That you need to accept the oral law as well. Now, why is this an amazing Gemara? Because he converted. And remember again, it's not the pshat that he didn't accept Shatniz or Kol Isha, right? What didn't he accept? He didn't accept Torah Shebaal Peh. He did not accept the oral tradition, which, by the way, is a combination of both biblical law and rabbinic law. And yet what? Hillel still accepted him. So what's the pshat? How could Hillel have accepted this convert if he explicitly said, I am not converting, I'm only converting on the condition that I do not accept the oral tradition. So look at 28. So this is from the Sefer Chemdas Shlomo. The Chemdas Shlomo says something very amazing. The Chemdas Shlomo is Rav Yitzchak Shmelkos, who was lived in 1876. He was the Rav of Lvov. So the Beis Yitzchak writes the following. He says, Amnam, So the Beis Yitzchak makes an amazing suggestion. The Beis Yitzchak writes that in reality, even though the Gemara said that what? That if a person converts, that's, remember this is the Gemara number 24, that only kochavim shebala kabel divrei Torah chutz midavar echad, if a person wants to convert on the condition that they're not accepting one mitzvah, so what does the Gemara say? Ein mekablin also. We don't accept him. So what does the Beis Yitzchak posit? L'chatchila, we don't accept him. But b'di'evet, if you converted him, then what? The conversion is good. Beis Yitzchak says, and where do I get that from? The story with Hillel. The fact that Hillel converted this individual, even though he was not accepting Torah Shebaal Peh, see, Hillel obviously understood that he will get this guy to come around. He understood that the guy had some kind of mishigas, he'll work with him, he'll get him to come around. But the fact that Hillel could affect the conversion, even though what? This individual actively said that he is not accepting Torah Shebaal Peh, the Beis Yitzchok says, means that when the Gemara says that if somebody converts in the Kedisha, they're not accepting something, that the conversion is not good, that's lechatchila. That's meaning we should not accept a person like that. But if you did actively convert the individual, which would mean, again, mila, tevila, then what? Then the conversion is, in fact, good. The conversion is good. So therefore, again, and that now this is very important for us. Because what this says is that l'maisa, if a person converted, and a person converted knowing full that they were not going to accept something, according to the Beis Yitzchak, based on the Gemara and Hillel, the conversion would still be effective. Again, l'chatchila, we would not want to convert a person in this particular situation, but if the conversion did in fact go through, it would be a bona fide Jew. Yes?
But the story of Hillel was l'chatchila.
So you'd have to say, here, right, so that's Rachel saying good. So what you'd have to say is Hillel did a bidi'evet conversion lechatchila, if that makes sense. He knew it was a bidi'evet situation, but he did the conversion. But you have to say he did the conversion because he was confident that he would get the guy to come around. So in Achinami, he did a bidi'evet conversion lechatchila.
Why can't we say that all the time?
Oh, so that's what we'll have to say.
You don't
good.
Accept it now, but we believe
good.
We'll accept
so,
it.
Good. Excellent. So you'll see now I'm setting you guys up a little bit for next week's shir also. Because again, now so Elliot's saying good. So meaning, can we actually use this? Let's say I have someone who wants to convert, or I have someone who needs to convert. You can have a situation like this where let's say you have a spouse that's intermarried. So can we apply something like this? That I'm confident, just, you know, there are some people that are growth-oriented people. And even if right now they're saying, oh, this is not for me, this is not for me, give them a little bit of time and they'll grow into it. Can we essentially do a lechatchila, a bidi'evet conversion lechatchila, if we are confident in the convert, in the same way that Hillel was confident in this guy? So that we'll see. That we'll see. But clearly, that's the Beis Yitzchak is saying is happening over here. Rav Moshe Feinstein, number 20, we're not going to do it inside, but Rav Moshe writes that Hillel also understood Hillel understood that it's not that the guy didn't believe in Torah Shebaal Peh. What he didn't believe is that some of the stuff that Hillel was telling him was true. I mean, what does that mean? That the prospective candidate for conversion thought that maybe Hillel was trying to give him some chumrus. He didn't think that Hillel was giving him the real story. So Hillel understood his issue is not with the body of law. His issue is perhaps if I'm giving him the actual truth. So therefore, Hillel felt that it was appropriate to convert him under these circumstances. But leaving aside Ramosha for a moment, the space Yitzchok gives us a groundbreaking insight into conversion. That even though we say you need Kabbalah Samitzvos, you have to accept everything, everything you know, everything you don't. It would appear that even if someone converted with the mindset that I'm not accepting it, b'di'evet, the Geirus is still good. Let's go on. Take a look at number 30. Now the Rambam here says something absolutely wild. The Rambam says, v'ger shelo batku acharav, o shelo hu di'u ha-mitzos va'onshan, umal v'taval b'fnei gimel ha-yotos harei zeker. So this is amazing. The Rambam says, let's say someone slipped between the cracks. So, and what happens? Someone converted, and you know what? No one ever did any background search on him. Like nobody ever worked with him. Nobody ever told the mitzvos. Nobody ever went ahead and taught him anything. And he converted, meaning he did bris milah, and he went to the mikvah, and he did this in front. We didn't speak about the obligation of bais, and we'll leave that for a different shir. Afilu nodashim. So again, the Rambam says, it works. It works. Such a conversion is good. Now, so understand what that means. What that seems to mean is that if somebody comes along and says, you know, I don't want to be Jewish. I really want to be Jewish. I love the Jewish people. I love Chalant. I love Kishka. Whatever they're saying. I love Shabbos. Whatever it is. I want to be Jewish. They do bris milah. They jump in the mikvah. Three Eidim are there. Well, based on this there. They're Jewish. So this flies in the face of everything we've seen until this point in time. Because the Rambam himself was the one who said what? Right? Ikrei das. The Rambam was the one who introduced us to this idea that it's not even just enough to tell them the behavioral obligations of Judaism, but you have to tell a person the basic theological tenets as well. So what's happening over here? How could the Rambam say this, that if somebody essentially went ahead and did bris milah and did immersion in a mikvah and didn't really commit themselves actively to anything else that they're Jewish? Look at number 31. This is from the Sefer Chemdas Shlomo. The Chemdas Shlomo is Rav Meir Don Plotsky, who lived from 1866 to 1928. So the Chemdas Shlomo says something amazing. He says, skip down a little bit to the second paragraph. Al kein nira la'anias daiti, dekabolas ha-mitzvos, v'hoda'as ha-mitzvos, shnei inyonim hei. The Chemdas Shlomo says you have to distinguish between two concepts. Hoda'as mitzvos and kabolas mitzvos. Hoda'as mitzvos means what? Informing a person about mitzvos. And kabolas mitzvos means what? Acceptance. Look at this amazing diyuk. He says, the kabbalas ha-mitzvos, he bistam sheyekabel alav lehikanes bedas yehudis. So the Chemdas Shlomo says, you know what kabbalas ha-mitzvos is? Kabbalas ha-mitzvos is a general acceptance to be Jewish. A general acceptance to be Jewish. I accept Judaism. Dezeh havi memela kabbalas ha-mitzvos, v'hodas ha-mitzvos, so listen to this. Something amazing. When the Rambam says the following, he says, look up back up at number 30 for just a moment. The Rambam's case was, what's the Rambam's case? Where what? Someone's converting, and yet what? We never told them about any mitzvos. We never told them about anything. But the Chemdas Shlomo says, but they did what? They did what's called the Kabbalas HaMitzvos. But how can you do Kabbalas HaMitzvos without Hoda'as HaMitzvos? How do you accept if you don't know? And the answer is, you can't. You say, I accept Judaism. Whatever, I don't know what it says. I don't know what it is. I'm sorry.
Correct.
Like, I don't write the Rus model exactly. I just accept it. Whatever. Now seven Ishma. Whatever it is. The Chemdas Shlomo says such. What the Rambam is teaching us is such a nondescript Kabbalas HaMitzvos works. Even if a person is what? Totally ignorant as to what exactly they just accepted. Oh, you don't even know what you just accepted. Right? You don't even know what you just said yes to. It's okay. Even if you're totally ignorant as to what it is that you were accepting, as long as your acceptance is genuine, that is enough. And in fact, if you take a look at number 32, the Achiezer, Rav Chaim Ozer Gerzhensky, says the following: Ulevad ze, nira didin ze, dinochri sheba lehiskayer, ulekabel alof kalamitzos, chutz mi diktuk echam and divrei sovrim, de'i mekamblin oso, haina benas. So now, again, what the Chaim Ozer Gerzhensky says, but I don't understand something. Because what did the Gemara say before? The Gemara said that if a person converts, we have now conflicting ideas. Because the Gemara said, if a person converts, and they say, I'm converting on the condition, that's what, that I accept everything, chutz mi davar echad, except for one thing, either biblical or rabbinic, what's the halacha? We don't accept it. And yet, what did the Rambam just say? That if someone knows nothing, but what? But say, I accept it, then the conversion is good. So Chaim Oz says, what's going on over here? He says, I'll tell you what this means. When that Gemara's case, when the Gemara spoke about the case of a person who accepts everything except for one mitzvah, you know what he was saying? De'im ha-kabbalah, so hainu, on the three lines in, third, middle of the line, hainu, b'masne shelo lekabel, v'shiye mutter lo dover ze min hadin, b'ze, ein mekablen oso, de'ein shir utnai begeros, ve'ein gerus lechatzon. So the Chaim Ozer Gerzhensky says, what's the Gemara's case? The Gemara's case is, if we're going to call him, if John is going to convert, and now what happens, he says, you know what, I'm going to convert, but on the condition that shatnez does not apply to me. Does not apply to me. Meaning, I'm going to convert, and I am not bound by this. It doesn't apply to me at all. That's the Gemara says, no, you can't do that. Because that's not true. It does apply to you. However, look what Chaim Ozer Gerzhensky says. Aval, b'misha mekabel alof kalamitzos, rak shebedaito la'avor l'te'ofon, ein zech yisaron bedin kabolas ha'mitzos. Oh, so look Chaim Ozer Gerzhensky. But if a person says, you know what, I accept everything, but I know I'm going to violate. Why do I know that I'm going to violate? Because my favorite suit is my Hugo Boss, my Armani, whatever, right? And it's mamish. It's filled with shatness from the top to the bottom. And I love that suit. It's my favorite suit. I know I'm going to wear it. I'm even going to wear it to my conversion ceremony, right? And I'm going to wear it the Shabbos when I get my first Aliyah. And it's my favorite suit. Chaim Ozer Gerzhensky says, the conversion is valid. So again, Chaim Ozer he really creates a very fine line of view. He says again, when do we say, so what we're doing now is we're really reinventing the concept of Kabbalah. What Kabbalah HaMitzvos means is what? I accept the framework. I accept it. Am I going to perform everything? Maybe not. And actually, it's quite possible that I already know that thing over there, I'm not going to perform it. But I accept that it's true. I'm not negating the authenticity. Meaning, when the Gemara says that if you don't accept one thing, you negate the authenticity of the conversion, that's when what? That's when I say, I don't believe that is true. I don't believe that this should apply. I'm not accepting it at all. But if I accept the framework, what the Chemda Shlomo called Kabbalah, everything is true. I accept everything. I know I should be doing everything. But what? I know already now that I'm not going to be doing A, B, C, maybe D. I already know I'm not going to be doing it. Says Chaim Ozer, the conversion is still good. So we see over here is that Kabbalah HaMitzvos does not mean an active commitment to perform everything. What Kabbalah HaMitzvos means is what? I believe that all of this is actively binding. I believe that all these obligations devolve upon me. I believe I should try to be able to do it. But even if I know right now, even before the conversion, that I'm not going to do one of those mitzvos, says again, his idea is l'te'avon. Why am I not going to do the mitzvos? Why am I going to violate? For my own pleasure. Not because I don't believe in it. I believe it's the word of God, or I believe it's the word of the rabbis. I believe it's binding. But I also know that I have this particular weakness, and I know that I'm going to violate. Says Rav Chaim Ozer, says the Chaim Lashom, says the Rambam. I'm sorry?
There's no end to that.
Yeah, but don't get too excited. First of all. Right? This is for converts. Right? You're already in. Right? So good. So Yaakov's saying good. Right. Yaakov's saying good. The question is that how far does this go? So what does this mean? Let's say a person says, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to convert, but I know, you know what? I love to go to the mall on Shabbos. So I know, I accept Shabbos. So there has to obviously be some type of cutoff for this. So take a look at number 33. So Rashi, listen to this case. This is a mamish, a maisa shahaya. I think with this we'll probably have to conclude. I apologize, we're a little bit later, but we'll just finish this and we'll stop. So look at this. Gioris shekiblo bepeh kol mitzvos, rak choshva lechalo yomtov pam achas, v'pnei dochak parnasosos. Listen to this. A woman converted, but she one time had to be machal yom tov because of her job. What's the case? Look at 33 Aleph. Hine, bedover giyores achos, shenisgaira birotzon mamish l'shem shemayim. There was a giyores who converted for appropriate purposes. Umisimchasa kishenikva mebeiz din ayom shetitpa b'mikva lef mebeiz din sifra li'isha achos m'makiraha, asher b'yom zeh hi oleches l'mikva, So what happens? This woman, in her excitement of the conversion, tells her Jewish friend, "You're not today's my day. I'm going to the mikvah. I'm going to convert. I'm going to become Jewish." So what happens? So of course, so who is her greatest? Who is her greatest? Who's trying to talk her out of converting? Her Jewish friend, and her Jewish friend says, "Don't do it." You know why? Because I know where you work, and I know that your employer in the office is not going to be understanding of your especially you just converted. All this time you're working Shabbos and Yom Tov, and now suddenly again you're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your job. But the prospective convert did not listen. Listen to this. So when is this taking place? It's taking right before Pesach. So first of all, the fact that a woman would convert before Pesach is pili poim, right? Wait 2 weeks. Okay, so that's the Shema. So she wants to convert, so she's converting before Pesach, and now what happens? So at the time of the conversion, she's already thinking to herself, you know what? I'm going to have to go into my office on the last 2 days of Pesach. She knows already before she's going to the mikvah, before she's converted. But the truth is she figured to herself, you know, I'll go into the office, I'll do what I can that does not require malacha. And he goes on, he says, what did she do? She went out of her house, she went to work on Pesach. She only took just tokens for the subway in her pocket. She went on the subway, she went to the office, and she tried to get by without doing any kind of real malacha. Now remember again, remember the timeline over here. So her friend is talking, this is the day she's going to the mikvah, she's going to convert. Her friend tells her, don't do it because you're going to lose your job. She gets all nervous about this. At the time when she goes into the mikvah for conversion, she already knows that what? That she is going into the office on Pesach. She is going to work on Yom Tov. Granted, she's going to try to minimize her violation of halacha, but she knows already at the time when she's immersing in the mikvah that she is going to work. So what happens? Skip down a little bit. Avahi chosheshes. So if you skip down, he says, and also says, by the way, and there were a couple of times also where she knew on early Shabbat, so she knew that she was not going to get home in time for candle lighting. And she knew that she would get home already after the 18 minutes. So these are all the thoughts that are going on in her mind at the time of her actual conversion. What happens? Umeaz ze'eser shanim shelo ira she'avra klom. Va'adraba, he last three lines in Aleph. Adraba, he machmeres b'yosha muchzekes eitzo kol makireha. L'shomeres kol mitzvos ha'Torah b'ziros kidola. Aval l'choshashes shema b'shom achshavta b'shas ha'geirus she'telech l'misrad b'shri v'achron shal Pesach. D'shan rishona. Ein Gerusa Bishlemos. So remember, so Moshe, this is now 10 years later. Someone converted, didn't say anything. For the last 10 years, she's a very pious woman. She's been carrying around this baggage that what? That she's not Jewish. Right? That maybe she's not Jewish. Maybe her Gerus, maybe her conversion was undermined and ineffective because, again, when she went into the mikvah, Sharon, she was going to go to work on the last 2 days of Pesach, and because she violated Shabbos a couple of times. So what happens? Listen to how profound this is. V'chol Pesach Shaya Achrazeh. He nechles u'mistares zemod, and every subsequent Pesach, she gets sick. She gets sick over this. Why? Not that she's going to work, but she gets sick because every Pesach she's reminded about what she did on her first Pesach of her Jewish life. So she comes before a Moshe with a very simple kasha, which is what? Am I Jewish? Was my conversion good? And Ramoshe gives three answers. Base. So Ramoshe says there's not even a shayla. First of all, she did a Kabbalah Samitzos in front of a Beis Din. She said to the Beis Din that she's accepting all of the mitzvos. What about the fact that in her heart she had in mind to violate? Letter Gimel, Rav Moshe says, Dvarim Shebalev Einam Dvarim. There's a halachic concept that in halacha we go by what you say and not what you think. So Rav Moshe says, what happened with this woman? She stood before the basin, and what did she say? What did she say?
Amen.
Amen. I accept everything. But in her mind, she's thinking, well, maybe accept A, B, C. Rav Moshe says, we don't care what you are thinking. What we care is what you said. We care about what you said, and what you articulated was a full and complete acceptance. Then Rav Moshe goes on. Look at letter Dalet. And this is amazing. Shlishis. Mistaber mimashmos kama dvarim. Diger shekibel kol amitzos. Aval omer la bezdin. Av shemekabel alav kol amitzos. Yodea shlo yucha lama b'nisoy lahar. Listen to this. Let's say, and I always, this is very interesting. Let's say a person comes to convert. And they say, I accept everything, including kolishan shatnes. Right? I threw out my Armani suit. I accept everything. But you know what my problem is? I know that there are three averos which I have to give my life rather than violate them. Immorality, idolatry, and murder. And the truth is, if those circumstances arise, I don't really know if I'd be able to give my life rather than violate. I might really end up violating instead of giving my life. So Rav Moshe says, so what do we say to that person? I'm sorry, you know what? If you don't accept this, so you can't become Jewish. Rav Moshe says, he says, Shenechshev kabbalas mitzos, me'achar shekibla chiyuv mitzos l'kaimam, kishiyeh le'be'efshar shu shelo tein musa. Rav Moshe says that if a person were to come forward before us and say, I don't know if I'd be able to give my life in a situation where the Torah demanded it, Rav Moshe says that is not a deficiency in their Judaic acceptance. Why? Because again, what we are looking for from the convert is what? What we are looking for from the individual is a general acceptance to the precepts of the Torah. What are we not asking from them? How they would weather extenuating or extreme circumstances. For one simple reason, and that is because none of us know how we would respond in that circumstance as well. Meaning we all know that you have to give your life rather than violate certain things. But who among us knows that when, God forbid, if we had to stand up to that challenge, who knows what we would do in those circumstances? Therefore, says Rav Moshe, when we look, what Moshe is saying is, Kabbalas Hamitzos means normative acceptance. We do not ask for a person to be able to tell us with absolute certainty what they would do in extreme situations. And Rav Moshe says something amazing. Rav Moshe says, he says the following, he says, Chada, Dahari Kabbalas Kol Yisrael Mitzos B'Shas Matan Torah, Ha lo kol Yisrael hayu kavram avinu. So Moshe says, because remember, let's go back. Where do we take the process of conversion from? Where does it come from? Our forefathers by Sinai, right? They all converted. And yet what? Just not so long after their conversion, what did they do? They were faced with an extreme circumstance. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was dead. And what did they do? They worshipped idolatry. So do we say that their conversion, therefore, was not good because ultimately, in a moment of extreme duress, they lapsed or they relapsed? No. So Moshe says, you see from here that Lamaisa, again, when it comes to Kabbalah Mitzvot, we ask for a person is a general commitment. We don't ask for them to be absolute sure about how they would react under extreme circumstances. Rav Moshe, something amazing. Rav Moshe says, Parnasa is extreme circumstances. When people are faced with the possibility of losing their job, the source of their Parnasa for religious beliefs, yes, there are some individuals who are strong enough to stand up to that. There are some individuals, again, we look at this not so long, you know, we live in Baruch Hashem, a totally different world, where thank God now our employers must honor our religious beliefs under the threat of prosecution. This country was not like that a long time ago. We just look at the Jews who had to come over from Europe, and even the Jews who were here in the early part of the century, who had to make a choice between their parnasa and their religion. Rav Moshe says that's extenuating. That is extenuating, and not everyone could be expected to stand up in the face of such a nisayon. And if someone were to convert with a full acceptance and then would violate Shabbos for their parnasa, Rav Moshe says that is not in any way a compromising of their beliefs. It just means that they're not yet strong enough to be able to stand up and do that which is right. So Rav Moshe says to this woman who was broken all of these years, your conversion is good. And even if you had in mind that you were going to go into the office on the last days of Pesach when you went into the mikvah, it doesn't matter. Because what matters is you accepted the mitzvos in a general sense. We can't ask for a person's commitment in extreme circumstances because those extreme circumstances are very difficult and everybody reacts differently. Rav Moshe finally says in the letter, hey, that since this episode, she has established herself, her identity, as a truly pious woman. And because she is a truly pious woman, that in and of itself indicates the fact that her conversion was appropriate. Look at 34. The Beis Yitzchok writes, the Af, Dashach, Posek, Besimen Reish Memches, Sifka and Tes, the Kabbalah, Hamitzos Af, the Eved Ma'akiv, Hayuim La Kibel Hamitzos Klau, Avalim Kibel Rov Hamitzos, Chutz Mimi Utan, O Chutz Mi Dabar Echad, Bidi Eved Mahani. The Beis Yitzchok says again, Lemaisa, if there's a Kabbalah Hamitzos, as long as the person accepted what? The majority of mitzvos, the Kabbalah, the acceptance is good. So what comes out from here is really something amazing. So you begin essentially with a model that says in the Gemara that in order for acceptance of mitzvos to be true, to be complete, what has to happen? You have to accept anything and everything without any level of reservations. If you go ahead and you exclude something from your Kabbalah, then ultimately, again, the Kabbalah is not good. We then went on to show the Gemara with Hillel. Hillel, says the Beis Yitzchok, tells us, creates a paradigm that what? That even if you convert without accepting everything, then what? The Geirus is at least good b'di'evet. So we've gotten to a b'di'evet. But then we saw the Rambam. Based on the Rambam, we saw the Chemda Shlomo, says there are two parts. There's Hoda'as Mitzvos and Kabbalas Mitzvos. Kabbalas Mitzvos means what? A general acceptance of the precepts of Judaism. Even if I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, what I'm not going to do. And the Achi Ezer says, even if I know that what? Even if I know that I have a particular weakness in a particular area and I'm going to end up violating, then what? Then what? The conversion is still good. As long as, what's the caveat? As long as I accept everything as being true. So I have to accept that everything, both rabbinic and biblical, is binding and is obligatory upon me. But if I say I'm weak and I'm not going to be able to do everything, says the Achir, says Rechaim Ozer Grzhensky, that is not going to compromise my Geirus. Says Rav Moshe, if I accept Torah, if I accept Kabbalah Mitzvos, but I don't know what I would do in extreme circumstances, either extreme circumstances of giving up my life, God forbid, or extreme circumstances of Parnassa, and I were to violate in the case of Parnassa, Rav Moshe says, that does not in any way compromise the Geirus, because what comes out is that Kabbalah HaMitzvos means a general acceptance of the Torah as being divine and as being obligatory and binding upon me. If I myself struggle with my own weaknesses and don't know what I will be able to fulfill or where I will have a lapse, you see already, Rechaim Ozer Grzhensky, Rav Yitzchak Shmuck, the Chemda Shlomo, Rav Plotsky, Rav Moshe, all saying that as long as the lapse is Latei Avon, as long as the lapse is because I have a certain desire for something, as long as the lapse is because of some extenuating circumstance, that will not go ahead and compromise the Geirus. Just to conclude, if you look at number 36, there's a rabbinic organization in Israel called Sohar, which is a wonderful organization that is really focused on trying to build bridges within the different segments of Israeli population. So they had a whole article about Geirus, and he quotes a number of very interesting positions. If you look in paragraph A, about halfway down, he quotes from Isser Yehuda Unterman. Rav Unterman was the chief rabbi of Israel from 1964 to 1972. He lived 1886 to 1976. And Rav Unterman wrote the following psak. He says, Im yomer be'inyon, she'parnasasa teluya bo, she'bemikra kazeh yeh muchrach l'chal Shabbos. If let's say the person who's converting said, you know what, I'm going to be Shomer Shabbos, but if I had to make a choice between my parnasa and Shabbos, I may end up violating Shabbos. Ein zu nechsheves minia bekabalas ha-mitzvos. This is not considered to be like he is deficient in his acceptance of mitzvos. But what is he being? He's being honest. I don't know if I'd be able to stand up to the challenge of losing my livelihood. And he goes to the Achiezer and says that even if a person knows that he's going to violate, because he has a certain desire to do something, that does not in any way diminish the acceptance of mitzvos. He quotes from Moshe, but if you skip down all the way to the end, he quotes over here, Baruch Zu, Gam Hora Shlomo Aviner. So Rav Aviner, who is the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Ateret Kohanim, and a Rav in Beit El, writes the following. He says, Ein tzorech lahachlitz etzager, b'she'ilos chodronios, ma ya'aseh b'matzavah mishmarim shevachayim. Don't bother asking the convert about what he or she would do in extenuating circumstances. Right? There's no point in asking that question. You know, if somebody put a gun to your head and told you to kill Reuven, what would you do? Don't ask those kind of... If you had a choice between Shabbos and your parnasa, don't ask... Rav Aviner says, don't even ask those questions. Why? Why? Because even if the person would answer... First of all, Because you can't answer those questions. You can't answer those questions except for Shas Maisa when it's actually occurring. It says, Rav Avinu, so what you should do for the ger? Aval yesh tzorah sheikabal al atzmo kiyum hamitzos be'emes ubitamin. So Rav Avinu, what do we look for? We look for a person who's genuine. Does a person accept kala Torah kula? And does a person has a genuine acceptance? That's what we're looking for. Again, we're not asking for a person to be perfect. We're not expecting a person to be able to fulfill every single precept. But what we are asking for is that a person believe, Torah Shevichsav, Torah Shebalpeh, believe that everything, even that which they don't know, do know, agree with, don't agree with, is binding, and that they exhibit a true desire to try to do everything. Even if what? Even if Lamaisa, they may not be able to do so. So what comes out over here, again, now you understand also, by showing you the different sources, you also understand why these controversies exist within Halacha. Because if you just read the Gemara straight tells you is that you got to accept everything without anything left out, without any exceptions, without any caveats. But again, we see another whole school of thought that essentially says, really what we're saying is that the convert should pretty much be held to the same scale that we accept of the rest of us. That just like I realize my imperfections, and I realize that I'm not sure what I would do in extenuating circumstances, and I realize that I can't fulfill every single thing to the T, so someone who is asking to join our fold should be measured against that same type of barometer, that same type of metric, and not held to a standard of perfection. But this is the fundamental dispute that unfolds to this very day. And these cases happen all of the time where someone shows up for conversion and they are, again, desirous of really converting, but their religious practice is not where it should be. So what do you do in such a situation like that? Do you pull the hillel and essentially go ahead and do a bidi'evid conversion l'chatchila because you believe the person will come around? Or do you go ahead and wait till a person measures up to a certain point where at least you say, okay, now the person is trying, they're doing the best right now, it's enough to go forward? Or do we say no? Until you reach some established framework of what we'll call Judaic perfection, we cannot allow you into the fold. Now, ultimately, you see also that all three of these approaches have textual foundations on which to stand on. So we'll stop over here for today. But Emirat Hashem, next week's shiur is going to focus on really one major issue, and that is conversion for the sake of marriage. And with that, we're going to deal with that question in two different ways. Number one, let's say people are not married, but it's clear that whichever one, the non-Jewish, let's say the non-Jewish man has taken an interest in a Jewish woman, and it's clear that the only reason for his conversion is for her, what do we do under those circumstances? Or, which is the more contemporary case today, of a non-Jewish man married to a Jewish woman, have Jewish children, do we convert the spouse ultimately for the benefit of the family? Even if we know that perhaps the spouse's dedication and religious commitment may be quite lacking in the immediate future, do we ever do conversions for the benefit of the familial unit, even if it's not necessarily in the best interest of the individual? So, Mir Tashem, that's what we'll focus on next week. Again, same time, Wednesday morning, Mir Tashem, 9:30. Correct. Thank you.